Hey guys, this is Nikki.
This is Sam.
Welcome back to So What? What's Next?
I spent the bag on the bundle. Turn around and take a flip and make a double. Listen, baby. With me, you ain't never gotta struggle. I'm in the game, 650. Catch a triple double. Watch it tumble. Tumble. Watch it tumble. Tumbling, tumbling, tumbling. This is coming in. Keep on tumbling. Watch it tumble. Tumble. Watch it tumble. Tumbling, tumbling, tumbling.
Hey guys, welcome back. Hey Sam, how are you?
I am good. How are you doing, Nikki? We haven't seen each other since the 16th of March, I think it was, the last episode
I posted. I know, you needed a little break from me. It's okay. Most people do.
You know.
Most people do, but you know, I'm glad that we are back.
You're a lot to handle, what can I say? What can I say?
You know, and I stand in my truth. You know, that's why you need hands to handle me. So with that being said, we can kind of jump in and catch up on some topics. I'm sorry to disappoint everybody, but the one thing that we're not going to be talking about ad nauseum is the slap heard around the world. I think ultimately what we want to focus on are just, you know, some current trending topics that we're seeing.
We're going to talk about Will, right?
Okay. We'll talk about Will, but we're not going to talk about the actual.
No, I'm good on the whole. I'm good on that whole part. Okay. But we are going to talk about Will and the vitriol that Jada is getting. I it's funny, Nikki. I've always joked about the Will Smith Jada Pickett thing all the time, but I didn't know people actually really hate her. And like, I didn't know people felt that strongly about them. Like, I didn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, that was kind of like, I think that was the most eye-opening thing for me, how strongly people felt about Jada and how disgusted they are with Will that he's even with Jada.
Yeah, I think that's the chicken and egg theory for me, right? I agree with you that this has turned into a total smear campaign on Jada. You know, people are falsely quoting her, or they read a headline of an article and they automatically believe it, right? Jada said Will shouldn't have done it. And it's like, you know, it's a source, but people just ran with it. And Jada's like, I haven't said anything. I haven't said anything to him. And, you know, and we live in that age where everybody's digging up old clips, old tweets and everything. Yeah. Manipulating it, I would say, to their advantage to fit their narrative. And we all do it. I'm not exempt from that as well. But, you know, I think this is just a time where people are taking the opportunity to capitalize on bashing a Black woman. Like we say in the group chat, anytime you say anything negative about a Black woman, the first thing we say is, just say you hate Black women. Just say you hate Black women. In reality, I don't think a lot of Black men hate Black women. I think the majority of Black men do love Black women. I just find that the vitriol and the venom that is spewed around particular Black women, you know, Jada and, you know, her relationship in her whole relationship, Gabrielle Union, Dwayne Wade, everybody hates Gabby. You know, like there's just so many different examples of where anytime there's an opportunity to pounce on certain women, people will do it. And I think Will and Jada invited that into their lives as part of, you know, being celebrities, as well as
putting everybody,
you know, their books, right? Like Will had this book, which is, it's an extremely long book, but it's an amazing book, which kind of explains, you know, why he is how he is now and how he's opened up and the things that he's had to endure in both of his marriages and just life overall. And I think, you know, because they've opened up their lives to us, it now comes with us passing all this judgment and projection. And overall, what I really hope for them is that they do take some time off, right? Like, I don't think Red Table Talk needs to come back anytime soon. I think they need to wait until like maybe after the summer, the fall. Let them go ahead and frolic, do a couple of safaris, do some traveling, and take some time to... I mean, I'm serious. This is just my opinion. Yeah. And, you know, I think they've done a great job of not feeding into the media. So no matter what somebody says from a headline perspective, they don't come out and say, no, you guys are idiots, or no, this didn't happen. They literally let everyone talk, and then they just continue to make money.
Right.
Right?
You know, I found, let me ask you this question though, because I was thinking about it from the Will perspective. And I was like, man, you know, it's crazy because I think Will seemed like he was very hurt during his Oscar speech, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, like, maybe what happened with Will was like, and he said some of this stuff before in the past. You know, Will has like a lot of like, I ain't gonna say his self-esteem is low. That's not the right thing to say.
Well, no, but, you can say that. He said it. He said it too, right? Like his self-esteem was low and he's played a character his whole life because he felt like he was never available to defend the women in his family, specifically his mother.
Yeah, well, something that was that dawned on me, because I used to listen to a couple of interviews he used to do with Charlie Rose, who got canceled because he was sexually harassing women also.
Yeah, he was part of Me Too. Yeah.
But he was talking about these talented actors and stuff and how they've all had these great moments and he's been, you know, kind of waiting on his moment. And he was saying how, like, you know, he's not as powerful as Denzel on screen or not as talented as Jamie Foxx and these people. And then, you know, he's getting ready to have his moment, his Oscar moment, you know, where he's going to be awarded his Oscar. And I just think that Will is, and I think he's been this way for like the last, man, what, 6 years. But he's been as like this search mode of trying to be happy, I think.
Validation, right?
Right. Well, he's been going, think about this. He did the whole Janet Hubert thing in front of everybody, right? He wanted everybody to know that he was sorry, contrite for what happened with that situation. He's been very open with his marriage as far as he felt like he's failed Jada more than she's actually failed him, right? Like, if you listen to them when they talk about this stuff. Yeah. He doesn't put it on her. Because she says, like, you was done with me, you know? So it's like little things there. And I think that, and then even with the filming the movie, he talked about how he's tried to fight to get them raises and get people paid appropriately. And now he's got this whole, like.
Yeah, that was the Anjanue Ellis situation King Richard, where he got everybody paid more money.
He's been playing all these strong male, black male role model figures recently. Back all the way to Pursuit of Happiness. And then you go to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air where he's trying to tell, like, what his story would be like if he was just, you dropped him in Hollywood, but not saying it's Hollywood. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like he's trying to therapy his way out of certain situations. I think when he got in the Oscars and Chris Rock tells this joke, I think he felt like he was gonna be validated. People would start laughing at him and start laughing with him. But you know, Chris Rock.
Yeah, I don't know what was going through his mind.
It's some psychotherapy going on there. That's
well, really I think you're right. I think you're right where he's actually acting out the therapy. I truly, someone who's been in therapy for over a decade, right? I see his actions as he's carrying them out. He is on the apology tour, he's on the open up tour, he's looking at things from both sides, he's doing he's righting a lot of wrongs, right? And as someone who's done this as well, I see that in his actions. I cannot speak to anything that happened on that stage, what's going to happen post after that. My whole goal is that everybody involved in that situation, Jada, Will, and Chris, continue to be to get the healing that they need and that they deserve. And the one thing that I will say is that in the essence of everybody talking about what happened, I'm really hoping for Chris Rock's sake that he is being covered and protected and not by his brother with, you know, Tony Rock is who he is, bless his heart. but I'm hoping that Chris Rock is getting the help that he needs and deserves as well, because he's specifically said, you know, they keep trying to get Chris Rock to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, nope. Yeah. Because in my mind, I'm under the impression he wants to be paid to talk about it. So he's waiting for someone to cut a check to talk about it. Also, it's still too fresh of an act for him to actually write it into his set. So I think he's going to take some time with his writers over the next 2-3 weeks or so, or next month or so, to incorporate it into his set so that it's actually funny and not coming from just a rushed angle, especially since his tickets are selling out like crazy.
I think behind the scenes, Will and Jada are the butt of a lot of jokes in elite Hollywood, I imagine.
Yeah, because they're actually A-list. And that's the thing. The A-list for Black celebrities is extremely small.
Very small.
A-list.
Right.
I'm not talking about like a Vivica Fox. I'm not talking about even a Gabrielle Union. She's not A-list. She's not going to. Denzel Washington is A-list. Will Smith is A-list. Samuel Jackson is A-list.
People that have their own productions that produce content, like actually fun content.
Correct.
That's upper echelon Hollywood.
They are A-list.
Right.
Not our favorite celebrities.
Right.
Not Kodak. And it's so small that I think, you know, they tend to be the butt of the joke, which I think, again, you can take a lot of it and everybody gets to a point where, you know, they had enough. But overall, we hope that they get the help and healing that they need and that people stop attacking Black women, because it's like, and I'm not saying this is all men.
Were you surprised how much they hate Jada? Like, I was like,
I was truly surprised because I curate my timeline to the point where I think it's pretty balanced. Right. But I was like, Jesus Christ, Jada continues to embarrass Will. Jada continues to emasculate Will. Jada continues to do this, this, and this. And I'm like, that woman sat there the whole time. She has not said a word after this whole incident. And people are continuing to tear her apart.
You think people are acting out what's going on in their household like that?
Oh, it's definitely projection. Absolutely projection going on there? It's the same projection that some men get when they see a woman getting an absurd amount of child support. And it was like, yeah, that's why you got to strap up. That's why you got to do this. Sir, nobody's coming after your $8 to $10 an hour paycheck. Nobody's coming after your wages. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
It's giving that same energy. And again, I don't know what go on in people's household, but when I see people tweeting or talking about it a lot, I may not comment, I may not address it, but I'm like, ooh, people really love to tell on themselves.
Right.
But how they digest a situation, people love to tell on themselves through text, social media, and other mediums. But overall, I do want to talk about some happy Black news. I think we were trying to, you know, cover some good things today. And I think the one thing that has had me laughing is the NFL conspiracy theories. I think that they may ultimately be true. Right before we took our small hiatus, Tom Brady retired.
Right.
Then he unretired, and we talked about that last, the QB drama, the controversy, right? And it was revealed that apparently Tom Brady retired and was about to become some big executive for the Miami Dolphins, and they were going to hire Sean Payton, the guy who was the head coach for the New Orleans Saints, and of course winning them the Super Bowl with Drew Brees. Sean Payton resigned from New Orleans to become the head coach in Miami. And that all of this was blown up after Brian Flores sued the NFL with that whole discrimination suit that is ongoing, which he just got two more coaches to join. Did you see that?
Yeah.
He had two coaches.
The name of Ray Horton is a big one because if I recall this correctly, Ray Horton used to have cornrows, right? And yeah, he did. He had cornrows as a DC. And I remember he was going up for head coaching jobs, and he said out loud, he was like, yo, this man told me they won't even interview me because I got cornrows.
Mm-hmm.
So he made a big deal about that. And I remember thinking to myself, that's going to be the last time we ever hear Ray Horton. And so when that name popped up on that lawsuit, I was like, oh my God, we heard of Ray Horton again. He's back.
Let's go.
So I was kind of surprised. I wasn't surprised, but I was like, oh my God, Ray Horton is involved. It makes so much sense. But I think my conspiracy theory is right. I think Belichick orchestrated this whole situation.
Because remember, we were talking about the thread that he sent to Brian. Correct. And we were kind of like,
Bill's way too meticulous for that. Right? I mean,
again, literally, the Patriots organization is so methodical. They're so meticulous. They're so ingratiated into the minutia of everything right. that there's no way he made this mistake. But I feel that I actually believe this theory. I'm not going to lie to you. I truly okay. believe
here's a good
that
one, here's
he launched this into effect because he wants to continue to humiliate Tom. The Dolphins
and Tom.
Keep me in my misery. And he doesn't want Tom to necessarily be successful without him.
So here it is, though, Nikki. Here's a really good one. Who was Sean Payton mentor and who coaching tree is he a part of?
Isn't he part of the Saban tree?
No. Bill Parcells. Bill Parcells.
Oh my God. The two Bills.
So oh you God. Know that Bill Parcells and Belichick.
And remember that whole debacle with the resignation and then yep, the transition right, of coaching. Right, and, right, oh, right. Okay. Keep going, Sam. Keep going. So, I like where you're going. I like where you headed.
So I think Sean Payton might have let his buddy know Bill Parcells what was going on. Parcells might have, you know, he's old now. He might have snuck a little. He might have said something to Belichick because I know him and Belichick just recently made up.
Yep, they back in good graces.
Yeah, they back in good graces. I think Belichick got a whiff of it and was like, yo, they finna try to fire my boy Brian. And the Miami Dolphins playing who division?
We playing the AFC East.
Yeah,
the Patriots. The Patriots have continued to torture us for almost 2 decades. No, it has been 2 decades.
And we already know that Saban hates the Dolphins owner. So this all, in my opinion,
it all together. Intertwined. It's intermingled. All of this is happening. Like at first it was full of jokes, but now I'm like, this is the never ending story. We got rid of Tom. Now we got to get rid of Bill. How do we kill Bill? Oh God, I don't want you to die, Belichick. But I don't want you to be the head coach anymore.
Yeah, you ever watch Godfather?
No.
So in Godfather, Sonny is Don Corleone's son, right? And he was the Don while Don Corleone was sick and not feeling good because he got shot. So he told Tom Hagen in the limousine, they was riding back from the meeting, he was like, yo, Barzini is the one that did it. And he was like, what are you talking about? He was like, Tataya could have never outfoxed Santino. He's a pimp. And I'm thinking to myself, Belichick did this. Flores could have never orchestrated all this by herself.
I'm following this whole theory. Trust me, I am following because as I'm reading this, you know, and I mean, there's a couple of things that's kind of like, okay, how does this happen? You know, does it make sense? And it's kind of like, no, it does. The more I actually, if I write this down on paper and start doing like the beautiful mind and start drawing lines and things and connecting it. Yeah. All of it is gonna make sense.
I'm all in on it, Nikki.
I am hook, line, and sinker. I am totally part of this entire theory of Bill Belichick continuing to screw Tom Brady and bringing the Dolphins down.
Yeah.
So also the NFL draft is coming up. Got a couple of people, hoping my people come through and get
I thought Dolphins got significantly better in the offseason, though.
I feel we've added some good pieces. I don't think there's any rookie that we'll add in this draft that's gonna contribute to this year.
Really? I don't think that's true. I think they will.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you got high up.
I feel good for the
You feel good for the Dolphins?
I do. And okay. I wish Flores is still there. I always hate when they hire the black coach just to fail.
Yep.
I always hate that. But
so I don't think initially it was that. Honestly, I don't think they hired him to fail. I don't. There's certain things towards the last 2 years that lend me to believe that the energy shifted. Because in the beginning, I felt like they were giving him, because Adam Gase was horrible. And I felt like they gave Brian Flores a lot of room in the beginning. And I think once Flores started making it known, I want these players. This fits my offense. This is, you know, they wanted to put him in his place. That's ultimately my thing. And that's what caused, in my opinion, that's what caused the
So you think it was shift. More place? You think it was more placism than racism?
Correct. Well, I mean, are they really different?
Not really, but I like to use that.
Okay. Yeah, you were just trying to rhyme there. You was trying to get your most deaf on. I got you.
Yeah.
Have you been watching TV lately?
So
I've given you 3 weeks to catch up on some good TV, Sam. Come on now.
As you know, I've been pounding the pavement on this. You know, if people don't know this, I am a entrepreneur. I've been doing a lot of pressure washing, and I've been pounding the pavement on some contracts and things that's going on. A lot of moving pieces right now, Nikki. You know that. I know that.
I'm aware. You know what I'm saying? I'm aware.
So I do need to. I need to catch up. I did watch one episode of Winning Time. I did watch that.
How much do you love it?
It's really good. It's really good. But you know, Adam McKay does such a good job with those little period pieces like that. Cause I mean, he anything Adam McKay directs and screenplays, you should probably watch it. Just go look it up. He does a lot of good work. So what has really surprised me though, is like, I mean, I knew Magic had to be a scumbag because I mean, he said as much. I mean, he said as much. You know what I'm saying? But
I mean, they start the episode off with his HIV diagnosis, right?
Yeah.
Like literally the episode starts off with him at Cedar Sinai in the doctor's office. And that's literally it. And at that time, it was pretty much a death sentence. So everybody who, you know, contracted it at that time, people immediately started, you know, grieving and started making like funeral plans and like, oh my God, he's going to die. And I remember what even prompted this whole thing was I think Magic was either increasing his life insurance policy or taking out more life insurance.
Yeah, it was life insurance policy, yeah.
Yeah, and because I think Cookie was pregnant with EJ. And he was like, okay, let me go ahead and link this insurance and get this up. And that's how it was discovered during the health screening, the health analysis, that he contracted HIV, and then they did the official test at the hospital, and that's when it was double confirmed. And that's literally how you found out. But I think, you know, watching the first episode, and I think we're always 6 episodes in now, it's not the Magic Johnson documentary, right? It's about Dr. Buzz, his mother, Jeannie Buzz, seeing how she comes in the ranks and how she gets involved. Seeing how they actually put the team together, how Jack McKinney was the coach, and then how we got to even understand how Pat Riley even got in the mix. You know, I had no idea. So I knew he was in the media. I didn't know he was calling games with Chick Hearn, right? I had no clue. My favorite thing about the show is that how they are showing how they truly wanted to market or start marketing basketball as a commodity, as an entertainment purpose, using the arenas for more than just the sports, being able to have, you know, things, you know, come together in LA because it's the city of stars, right? Like if a basketball team cannot survive in LA, it can't survive anywhere. Right. And, you know, my grandfather,
it goes back to the David Stern way of when he transformed the NBA of saying, we're going to make it about the players and not about the school. Right. So Magic.
Correct.
Magic and Bird, this is like something I was reading about. Magic and Bird, the black and white thing was big in it, right? That was huge.
That was huge because remember, this is 1979, 1980.
The black and white thing was huge. That's huge, right? Like you had to get Bird to Boston, right? You had to get him into this white area. This is important.
Correct.
You had to get Magic over there where the Bloods and the Crips and all this stuff was going at too, right? So like, in my opinion, all this shit was orchestrated. This is me talking. I'm just my conspiracy theory. But the game of basketball was so different before Magic and Bird got into the game, because before they got into the game, passing the basketball wasn't like some great thing.
It was very like me and my grandfather, when we talk about it, me and Pop say it's very fundamental basketball, right?
Yeah.
Like I think that's the part that I love the most, even playing the sport myself, is that it talks about, you know, and because, again, my grandfather is 83 years old, so he's seen a lot, right? And the Boston Celtics is his favorite basketball team. And I make this joke all the time. You know, my grandfather's 83, so he's seen a lot. He's seen racism and segregation. There's not a lot of white people he likes.
Right.
But
right,
one of the people who have made the list is Larry Bird. He loves Larry Bird. He almost loves Larry Bird more than Bill Russell. Almost. I would say they're pretty much neck and neck.
Right.
And he would tell me about, you know, even before him, even before Larry Bird, he said, you know, Bob Cousy and these other players where, you know, they didn't have TVs, right?
Yeah.
So they had to listen to the radio. So a lot of times they didn't know what race a lot of these players were unless they heard the last name,
right?
Right? And there was...
And back then they watched it on... They listened to it on radio. They didn't watch it.
Yeah, they listened. They only had audio. Yeah, right, yeah. Right. Because TV was a privilege for some families. And of course, you know, TVs came about more prominent in the late 60s, early 70s. But, you know, they didn't have a lot of idea of who these athletes were. So the black and white piece played an even more, it played a larger part because a lot of black people were rooting for black people. And a lot of the white people were watching them on TV because they had TVs.
Right.
So they knew or they hated certain people, which I think is so funny because when you, you know, they don't really do a deep dive into it on the show, but on other documentaries and other books, you would hear how much they were hated. The black athletes were hated anytime they did anything fancy. If they dribbled too much, if they went between the legs too much, if they, you know, got too flashy, like they would literally throw things at the players and try to get them, you know, out of the arena. You know, I think they even hinted to it with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So it's so good. And I don't want to give it away for people who haven't watched.
So I got to tell you something, Nikki. I got to tell you something. As you know this, I don't care what people do in their personal life, right? And you brought up Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And in my mind, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is just like black figure of like black wokeness of African-American, the Negro athlete, big part of the cause. Finding out these black, like big part of the cause, Muslim brothers.
Have white women.
Be with white women. It just always fucks me up. It just fucked me up every single time. And I'm like, yo, I didn't know Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is with a white woman. I did not know this, Nikki.
I did not know this. So I knew because before he was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he was Lew Alcindor, right?
I remember that. I know that.
Understand, my grandfather downloaded me into... You know, that's why I tell people, I feel like a lot of times I could have survived in the 50s, 60s, and 70s because my grandfather has downloaded so much into me where, you know, we've read enough books and watched enough documentaries and things to understand it because, you know, when he was at UCLA, they said he loved him a bunny, right? He loved him a bunny. Right. His father was a police officer, right? And that's where his original disdain for... white people came from is because of that background that he had. And that was one of the main reasons of going to UCLA because it was more liberal, right? It was not the New York that he was used to. And him going to UCLA, playing under John Wooden, you know, when he was playing during his time, there were not a lot of, in his mind, this is a direct quote, there weren't a lot of options for him. Right, man. So you know that's the Sidney Poitier, that's the Harry Belafonte, that's the Donald Glover, that's the, you know, when you, I think a lot of people get disappointed when they find out that prominent black men who speak for the movement are so, you know, involved in the movement and so passionate about it, choose to be with a spouse that's non-black or, you know, not a non-minority or people of color, but I truly believe that you love who you love, right?
Right.
Every white person isn't bad. Every black person isn't good.
Right. I believe that.
But I feel that if it may send a mixed message that if you're pro-black, why wouldn't you be pro-black in every aspect of your life, right?
Right. It's kind of...
I mean, think about it. Think about Bill Russell. And I'm only saying this because we're on this topic. Bill Russell.
We're here.
Bill Russell's one of those people as well, right? Bill Russell, yeah. I don't know. I don't think he went to an HBCU. I forgot what college he went to. Was it San Diego State? It was the college he went to, and everybody told him not to go to Boston. He was going to be drafted by Boston, and everybody told him not to go. That's not the place you want to go as a Black man. You don't want to go there. And Bill Russell was one of those people who was very staunch, had a Black wife, have Black kids. He won multiple championships in Boston as a player and as a coach. I think he was a GM for a little bit. And he had a Black wife, and his Black wife passed away. And now he is with a white woman, but he's with a white woman now. The formidable years of his life, he's always been with a Black woman. And Bill Russell now, in his old age, in his twilight years, is with a white woman. And it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you love who you love. And I am not opposed as of people's opinions changing, right? I'm not opposed to that. So maybe they were all, you know, I'm going to be a Black man married to my Black wife and have my Blackity Black kids, which could be the case. And there may be a situation or time in there where they have said, hey, I'm going to shift. I mean, I think we covered it in another pod where Eartha Kitt, when she dated Sidney Poitier when they were younger, Eartha Kitt literally was in love with him, and Sidney Poitier said, I can't be with you because you can't take me at where I want to go. You can't take me where I want to go. This is why I'm opting, you know, I mean, I'm quite sure he said in a more eloquent way, but this is why I'm opting to be with a white woman. Yeah. I can only go so far with you. And so, I'm not saying that it's true. I'm not saying that she's lying.
I'm not against interracial dating or anything, right? Like, I'm okay with it, you know. I'm kind of weird when it comes to this type of stuff, because, like, I'm not going to interracially.
You're not going to date outside of your race.
I'm not marrying a white woman, all right? I'm not marrying a white woman.
And you say that today, and we could be talking 10 years from now, and you white Nubian queen.
Now, I'm not going to lie. With Chance was like one,
a little bunny caught your eye.
I know when Chance was like one, like close to one, and you know the nights was very, very long
and cold, and you needed to rub your feet up against something.
I was like, a little less seasoning wouldn't be that bad. You know what I'm saying? But no, I wouldn't. I just don't think I can because I'm so.
I've dated out of my race.
Have you dated a white?
I've dated.
You went on a date.
A couple of white men.
You went on a date.
I went on multiple dates.
But did you date?
I dated, and I mean, like, actually went so on.
You seen a little pink thing.
I think that we should stop drinking during this podcast. I think we both should be careful. With our alcoholic intake.
I'm just saying, because, you know, dating. Now, it's one thing to get, like, free dinners, free trips, you know.
No, I
free fellatio, on the house fellatio.
Oh, my God, we're going there. I have not been on a foodie call with a man. A foodie call is basically when you go with a man that you don't eat. You go out on a date with a man that you don't like just for the food, just because you're hungry and you want to eat.
Right.
I have not been on a foodie call. I have dated white men, and it was a good experience. I don't have anything negative to say. I find myself more attracted to Black men. That's the God honest truth.
Okay.
It wasn't like, let me try something different or try something new. It was literally like, to be honest, I didn't even know they wanted to date me. Like, I thought they were joking.
Right.
Right, both times. These two particular
1950s on. They're trying to get the 1930s.
Yeah, I was like, I don't want to be fetishized, right? I don't want to be fetishized. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And they were like, no, are we going to?
He was like, no. Listen, Nikki.
Nothing trying to get action.
Was he British?
And it was like, okay, let's do it. Let's like, I don't have a reason to say no, because he was attractive. Mm-hmm. The other instance, you know, same thing. It was kind of like, you know, we should go out for drinks sometime. And it was like, okay, cool, whenever, whenever. And then when he started like pulling out the phone and looking at the calendar, and it was like, oh, you really want to do this? Okay. Yeah. You know, multiple dates. Again, I have not had a bad time. My preference just is, you know, a black male. I'm not cutting myself off from, look, let me tell you something. I learned a long time ago that I'm not going to put a period where God puts a comma. Okay.
True.
So,
I just want to say, I did say I won't date a white woman, but if it's like, you know, like Scarlett Johansson, you know what I'm saying? Like something crazy like that, whatever.
Oh my God.
Drop it to my lap. I mean, yeah, I'm going to do it.
Well, speaking of dating white women, have you seen The Ultimatum yet on Netflix?
No, Nikki, I can't. You know how I work reality.
I know TV. You're working. I know you're working. And I'm just hoping that. TV. Okay.
Everybody's so, talking about because my homegirl was just hitting me up and she's been watching Ultimatum. So I'm like, maybe it's worth watching.
Mm-hmm. So I just finished my glass. I am not going to refill. But yes, so.
Okay, I got another one.
Yeah, you filled it back to the top. I want you guys to know that tonight's podcast is sponsored by Cognac.
the drink slow part tonight.
Yeah. We doubled up on Poor Minds.
Right.
So The Ultimatum is basically this show on Netflix. I had no intentions of watching it initially because I knew that it was, you know, part of the same Love is Blind concept with Vanessa and Nick Lachey.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you know, Ultimatum, I'll check it out. So when it dropped, I was like, what do I have to do? And I had so much to do. So I was like, let me go ahead and knock out some of these chores and cut it on. From the first episode,
yeah,
I was like, oh my God, this is chaotic. And I cannot stop watching. It is so messy. It is so bad that it's great. Like,
really?
The show premise is basically about these couples. They're together, and one person, either the male or the female, excuse me, either the man or the woman, and issues an ultimatum to their partner about getting married. They want to take the next step. Some of these people have been together for, you know, a year and a half. Some of these people may have been together for 3 years, whatever the case may be. Ultimately, they're going on this show to give their partner an opportunity to experience life for 3 weeks with someone that's not them.
Oh, wow.
And then they spend another 3 weeks with their partner who they came with to decide if they're going to take part in this ultimatum.
Right.
Or if they're going to, if they made a choice or decision in this ultimatum, whether it's to break up, whether it's to stay together, or whether it's to get married. So it's basically going on a show, giving your significant other the opportunity or the chance to cheat on you.
Right.
Even though technically you're broken up, air quotes. And then getting back with them and deciding if this is what you want to do moving forward. And I don't think anybody on this show should be on the show. And I say that because a lot of these kids are like a couple of years removed from college, like maybe a year or two removed from college. Some of these people have just really started their careers, meaning that they just finished their enlistment in the military and now they're actually thriving in their careers. Some of these people don't want to have kids and their partner wants to have kids, which I feel is a non-negotiable, right? And, you know, you're issuing them an ultimatum. And honestly, I wish they would swap out whatever the ultimatum is with therapy, because that's ultimately what these people need.
That's funny.
But it is chaotic because, Sam, on the first day, everybody gets there. And on the first day, you beat Nick and Vanessa and you learn who issues the ultimatum. And in this instance, I think two of the guys issued an ultimatum and the rest of the couples, the women, issued the ultimatum. And then you get to pick out of everybody who's there.
Yeah.
You get to pick who you swap with. And it's chaotic because some people pick the same person. Or if one guy literally, like every person he picked ended up getting chosen by someone else. And at the end, he ended up just going to his girlfriend and says, hey, I don't want to do this ultimatum anymore. Will you marry me? Like,
that's how it, Nikki, that's how it really happens.
That is how it happens in real life. That's literally how it happens in real life. The man says, go find somebody else. Go find someone. I give you the opportunity to find someone else as he's looking for other people. And those other people ain't clicking. And he sees that other people want his girl. And now he's like, hey, you know what? Actually, I don't want anybody else. I want you.
Nobody wants me. I'm only
as faithful as my options. That's the real key right there. Nobody wants you. Nobody wants me.
Yeah.
So I say all that to say, you know, the show is purely chaotic. It is nuts as hell. And I sat there and watched all of the episodes in one sitting after
How
I finished.
How many episodes was it?
I want to say 8 or 9, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. If I'm not, yeah, because I think the last episode left off with the guys, everybody getting back together and ultimately finding out what happened when they were apart.
Wow. Okay.
So like Ray and Justin and Zay and Ray came together.
Mm-hmm.
And Zay's so young. He's immature, but he's immature because he hasn't necessarily dealt with the things that's plaguing him.
Right.
But Ray issues an ultimatum to Zay when the producers ask her in her interview, well, why do you love Zay? She can't even answer it. How do you give somebody an ultimatum to marry you, and you can't even say why you love your partner?
Because Nikki, she just wants the experience of being married. She don't want to really be married.
Honey, listen. And then over the next 3 weeks, she links up with one of the other guys, Justin.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tell you, they don't show actual footage of it, but I know Justin was hitting the back corner pocket of that thing. You hear me? Because the way they were was so crazy. They're literally falling in love with each other in this short time span.
He was going. Back home. Not right.
And I'm so sorry that this may be a spoiler alert, but when Ray and Zay get back together, Ray's family totally, Ray's mom and I think her sister or somebody totally get into Zay. And when Ray gets back with Zay, Ray's kind of like, well, he wants to work on it. She really doesn't because I think she caught feelings for the new guy.
Yeah, you can't be out there. See, this, and then, this is a white show, ain't it? This is a white show.
It's very, very white. So then Ray ends up leaving her man and tries to go get back with the new guy that she's been kicking him with for 3 weeks that's been beating her back in. And he tells her that he's going to go back to his girl. He's going to work it out with his girl.
Because it was just sex.
Oh, my. And he just needed a break because his girl was a lot. His girl name was April. And I'll be honest with you. His girl is a lot. She keeps wanting to have a baby. They've been sleeping together for like 2 years and she hasn't gotten pregnant. And she believes there's fertility issues, or I think there may be fertility issues, which is why she's so, you know, dead set on having a baby. Then he bought her like an SUV, calling it the mom mobile. Like he's totally gaslighting her, doing all these things, hoping she shuts up and be satisfied. But she just wants a ring. She wants to be married. You know, she's been with you through your whole, you know, military deployment. And I was like, she's so dumb, because if a man's been in the military that long and has not married you or even asked to marry you, girl, look, because the military man be getting married after 3 months.
Tomorrow. It don't take no time.
They meet you on a Monday. You are engaged by Friday.
It takes no time.
Someone
get married before they even, as soon as they sign the paperwork, they find somebody to marry. They be like, yo, let me get married.
They go right on the base. And literally the first person they saw, they like, hey, you know what? You cute. Let's do this.
How hard can it be?
But you gotta watch it. If you find a good 20-minute window, I promise you, once you start it, you're gonna be like, okay, wait a minute, I gotta. It's like the train wreck. You can't stop watching. You literally have to sit there and watch it.
I had another question before we hop off. It's been some concerning things going on with the Twitter account. People been DMing me, asking me, is it me? Am I tweeting from the So What's Next Pod account
handle?
And you're ruffling up the feathers. I want to say fellows. I want to say feathers.
I'm ruffling the feather.
Yeah. Shake up some apartments. You know what I'm saying?
shaking up some of the, can't even call them homes, just a little department. So our goal here at So What What's Next is to grow our platform. And in growing our platform, we've taken some time to, you know, kind of revamp our social media approach and things of that nature. And I have been spending a little bit more time under our handles than Sam, which I think you guys are picking up. And I think almost, I want to say that sometimes you guys may be intentionally trying to trigger me with some of your topics, because you know it's me behind the handle, which is hilarious, because again, I think Dibby retweeted something like a 1950s article from a home econ book that basically says tips to look after your husband. And it involves like a lot of cooking and cleaning and doing yourself up and making yourself presentable and having dinner ready and preparing yourself and removing the kids and all these other things. And I basically said, hey guys, we're free. You know, we've been free.
Okay. That's the thing you took with it. Okay.
We're free because people want to go back to these 1950 traditional things, and they want to take certain parts from the 1950s, but not all of it. Because I was like, you do realize that's the thick in the heat of, you know, racial tension in this country, right? You worry about me cooking a plate, and I'm just worried about you getting home alive. Like,
that is true. Tough times.
You know, you worry about me fixing a plate and whatnot. And I think there was another one where somebody said something like, the Cam Newton clip, right? Where Cam Newton
Yeah.
And then, you know, talking and being quiet. And I was like, hey, you know what? You're not gonna bait me. You're not gonna bait me. And again, it's all in a preference, right? Yeah. I'm not saying what Cam Newton said was right. What I'm saying is you have fathered 5 to 6 children out of wedlock on your own. I need you to kind of turn that mirror to yourself.
Well, Nikki, in his description of his grandmother, I'm pretty sure his granddad probably fathered a couple of outside children himself.
You know what? I'm not going to get into Cameron Jarrell Newton's business tonight. living in Atlanta, there's some absolute truths to certain things, and that's not my business to put out there. All I'm going to say is that Cam is entitled to his opinion, and we are entitled to retort. When they hit me up about it, I was just like, I'm not gonna do this. I just need him to take care of his 5 children and the other 3 to 4 that he claimed as his own as well. Fine.
It's important, Nikki. It's important to father the kids, even if you didn't want those kids to be.
Then set the example. Right?
Okay.
Because you cheated on your girlfriend to have the last kid you had.
Right. It's important to father the kids even if you don't want them.
It's important to provide a good example. No one is perfect, including myself and including Cam Newton. My whole thing is when you go out and say these things, there's going to be a reaction. Just like the whole Russell Wilson is corny thing, right? And when I see a lot of people calling Russell Wilson corny, I'm like, do you know you fit in that category too?
Right. But I think that's the projection, though. That's the projection thing, because
that is.
We know Russell's corny, but we're also corny also, right?
What makes Russell Wilson corny? The Hawaiian shirt you wear? No. I asked the same question, because when people tell me that Nick Cannon is corny, I'm like, what makes him corny? What makes these guys corny? And I'm just asking. I'm not saying that they are or they aren't. When people say that, your personal opinion or what you've heard from your friends, what do you think makes Russell and or Nick Cannon corny? What is
this
it?
This is not what I think.
Yeah. Okay. I like that you prefaced that.
I just want to put this out there. It ain't what I think. You know what I'm saying? This is just what the streets say. This is what the streets say. Okay.
There has to be
a dynamite hood thing about you that makes you it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you need the, you know, Gucci man. You need to kind of, you know,
You gotta have some bodies. You gotta slang dope. You ain't gotta necessarily do that,
but people need to think that you did that. You know what I'm saying? This is important for the hood mystique. You know what I'm saying? So it's a hood thing, you know. And women, some women are all into the New Jack City thing, you know, all black, gold chains. I don't make the rules. You know what I'm saying? I'm just here. I'm a backpack kid.
Now, I will say that the swag that Russ has now was not the swag he had back then, right?
I mean, he got a stylist.
But I also know that women can upgrade your life. Beyonce made a whole song about it, right? I will never forget. I think it was Cheryl Underwood who made that joke that Beyonce's so powerful that she made Jay-Z attractive. I remember literally that being a running joke in the early 90s, early 2000s, right?
That is funny because I remember
that.
She made
a whole song saying upgrade you. So Russell went from wearing Hawaiian shirts and dad jeans to now having tailored suits and, you know, more designer, right? I also think that as you age, you continue to mature, right? You continue to you know, get into your own style of things and understand who you are as a person and what works and what doesn't work. And you hire image consultants. You hire these people if you have the funds, if you have the means, right?
Right.
I would say Russell Wilson would be still bagging women even if he wasn't a millionaire. I personally believe that. Now, what type of women? I don't know. Right?
Yeah, okay, there you go. All right, let's put the preface on that.
But I would say he would be bagging women. He would. I mean
It's somebody for everybody in every time bracket.
Nick Cannon. I remember when everybody said Nick Cannon was corny. And for a good minute, Nick Cannon ran the early 2000s. He was in movies. Drumline that kind of made everybody know him. Then he was in Love Don't Cost a Thing.
Well, let's be real. He only made one good movie.
I can't even name the one good movie.
Drumline, the only good movie ever made.
Okay, cool beans.
All his music was bad. Nick Cannon.
All his music was not bad.
What song Nick Cannon got that's good?
The one song he had was good. I can't even mention it because
Gigolo. You better not say that Gigolo song.
That was a good. I'm sorry. But here's what I will say. What I will say. Nick Cannon was able to segue
a mediocre movie
career into multiple millions of dollars.
And how he did that, I'll never know.
If you look at Nick Cannon's resume,
bets at a high percentage.
Here's the thing. What makes him corny? Is it the way he dresses? Is it his dialect? Is it, you know, when I hear men say that, I you don't have to answer to me. I just want to get a better understanding.
He's another industry plant. Let's just be real.
Be the case. But again, I'm never going to knock a black man for getting his money.
I'm not upset with him. There's nothing talented about Nick Cannon. His stand-up was terrible. Okay, the Wild and Out show. That
was good.
That was good.
To let you come to your senses. That was good. I was not going to interrupt you.
Wild About
is so good that he insulted a whole group of people. He apologized and they brought it back and it's still doing numbers.
Wild About is good. Wild About is good.
I say all of that to say, you know, at the end of the day, you know, love who you love. The macro point here is love who you love. I'm just a big fan of the black nuclear family. I'm a big fan of people loving who they love without downing or degrading the other race. Mm-hmm. If your preference is to date white women, that's perfectly fine. You do not have to bash a black woman in order to date that white woman. Vice versa. If you're having issues with your white woman or your Puerto Rican woman or whatever, you don't have to down them in order to date outside of your race or your culture. Just love who you love. And as long as you ain't hurting people, kids, or animals and babies, you know, I ain't got nothing to say to you. Be great. What you got before we get out of here? I wanted to touch on that whole T.I. comedian situation, but
we'll do that some other time. I'm done with T.I. and these fake. I don't know what these things going on. Like, I don't care about that or her or him or all of it. Like, it's T.I.'s become a weirdo. And I love
I think you made a point about that in an earlier pod where you said, you know, when people are no longer famous, they now want to be infamous, right? Yeah,
but they can't let the mic go. They just
So here's one thing that I think somebody brought up a really good point where they said you have to learn how to master the pivot, right? You have to know when to turn a curve, when to pivot, when to go into a new aisle, a new alley, a new lane. And I think this is what I don't have any confirmation of this, but in my mind, this is what T.I. is doing, right? Like, he's done the music, wanted to take a stab at stand-up comedy, which is hard, which is difficult, because I can be funny.
It's hard.
I can be funny amongst my friends. I got some one-liners for you, but when you are standing in front of a crowd and you have to make them laugh and relate to them and different things like that, you got to be able to take some punches if you're going to deliver them. And I don't think T.I. has the EQ to be a stand-up comedian. I don't know if he's working with writers. I don't know if he's doing it himself. I applaud his effort to get out there and try something new. I just don't know if this is the right alley or the right pivot for him right now.
I mean, it is. Well, no, it's not. But I'm saying it can be. But stand-up is something that people think they can just walk on stage and just, like, be funny. Like, that podcast you sent me with Steve Harvey.
Wasn't that good? That Earn Your Leisure podcast with Steve Harvey?
I got to tell y'all, man, if you have not listened to that podcast with Steve Harvey, Earn Your Leisure, listen to that. That's probably I don't like 2-hour podcasts. I do not listen to any. I don't. Like, even with this pod, I try to keep this under an hour. Like, if we go over an hour, I'm like, oh, shit. That's the best 2 hours I've ever spent listening to somebody talk. Because a lot of people hate Steve Harvey for whatever reason. And, you know, he has his moments and everything, man. But him just sitting there talking about business, his kids, putting his kids in power within his business and empowering other people and all these different things. I was just like, yeah, this is
cutting out the middleman, learning how to manage and, you know, putting people in power that you trust. even how he was taken advantage of. I have not been the biggest Steve Harvey fan. I will tell you, listening to him on that pod totally changed my perception of Steve Harvey. I didn't even know that man's real name was Broderick. I thought he was Steve Harvey. I thought that was really his name. His name is Broderick Stephen Harvey. That's one thing I picked up from that, because like I said, I'm not a fan. I'm sorry. I've never been a big follower of Steve Harvey. I've admired what he's done in reference to getting paid, in reference to, you know, seeing him on TV and doing things that, you know, was difficult for Black people, Black men especially, to do. However, listening to that Earn Your Leisure pod where Steve Harvey got on there and broke down so many gems from the industry, what he learned, what he's still learning at his age, understanding what an NFT is, getting into that industry, that market, and again, mastering the pivot, right?
You know what, though? Understanding how graceful, he's very graceful, because he's very graceful and he's very appreciative of the people that came behind him and in front of him. And I never thought that just by watching him in his TV shows and stuff. I always thought he was kind of like one of those people that thought he was above everybody else.
Come on, Sam.
But when you listen to him, you hear it and he says it. Like, he says it a lot. Like, he'd be like, yeah, this guy was a bad boy. And this guy and that guy, he just kind of goes down and listens. Like, damn, Steve Harvey really appreciates
it. And when you listen to him, you can hear the therapy coming in. You can hear how he healed from that perception of what he was to what he is now. And I'm here for the growth. Like, I will now say that I am a fan of Steve Harvey because that opened up my eyes altogether. And we're referencing the Earn Your Leisure podcast. They have a couple of good gems over there. But if you go to, you know, wherever you listen to different platforms where you listen to podcasts, look up Earn Your Leisure and you should see the one featuring Steve Harvey. Check that out.
Well, let's wrap on that, Nikki.
Yep, that's it. Sam, it's been a pleasure as always.
All right. You be great, okay?
All right. Have a good one.
All right.
I've been wide awake for about a month, rounding it up. Mama done told me nothing easy, like, boy, get your ass up. Chewing up, I put in the work, now blessings counting up. Look at them haters frowning up, so I flex to rile them up. Hey, look at my boss, bending the cause, check my flaws, you can ignore.
come to the house, give you a tour, take your shoes and dirt on my floor, out of the taste. Good, she wanted more, she wanted more, out of the rain. The blessings coming in pour. Yeah, I spent the bag on a bundle. Turn around and take a flip.